Hello, you two, and Steve, this is your second time on the podcast, correct? You were on with Jay before, I believe.
Yeah, got a new tag team partner this time, though.
Yeah, this time we are accompanied by our good pal, Aubrey. Hello, Aubrey.
Oh, hello, you two.
Just since we have two people on at the same time as guests, why don't you just very, very brief intro on who you are? What do you do? What's your favorite thing to do?
Sure, I'll go first. I'm Aubrey Garwood, and one of my favorite things to do is photography. Love nature and traveling and all that good jazz. But I'm also a huge nerd, too, so, you know.
And my name is Steve Yurko. I am an artist. I'm a professional storyboard artist, and I'm also a huge nerd.
And, yeah, basically, just wanted to have Aubrey on, because, you know, she's a good friend, and also semi-recent, you know, well, by the time this goes up, it would have been a while ago, but by the time we're recording this, you had a very recently visited us, so here in L.A., we had a grand old time.
Yes, we did.
And that included some, well, perhaps one of the most efficient Disneyland days I've ever experienced. Incredible.
It was so efficient. I wrote down every single attraction we hit up that day.
Can you please just read it off?
Sure. Let me open up my journal.
I know Jay is listening to this as the editor going, he's talking about fucking Disneyland again.
It's
too bad,
again.
Jay. Too bad, listeners.
I don't know. I listened to the show and I haven't heard it brought up in a while. I'm not completely caught up, but
it'll pop up. You know, board games, Disneyland. You know, these things pop up, but I don't care. Anyway, please, I want people, especially those of you who are Disneyland familiar, how ridiculous this day was.
I also just want to caveat it that it was my first time ever at any Disney park, so.
Yes, and the first ride we rode was?
Well, myself and my friend Mike got there before
you. Not you, so we're talking about Aubrey, her experience.
All right. I did jot this down as the most efficient day at Disney I've ever had. But right off the bat, we started Aubrey's first ever time in any Disney park with the newest ride in Disneyland, Rise of the Resistance, the new Star Wars ride.
Which was incredible.
It was Sung Wan's first time as well.
Me and Anne-Marie had not ridden it, and you know, it's funny to be like, spoiling a ride, what are you talking about? But really, it's truly an amazing experience that you just want to go into completely blind. Like, it's just, it's a long ride, it's full of surprises, it is on a, you know, technical scale, one of the most impressive things in the entire both parks. It's just a gorgeous, amazing experience. And you know, every time I talk about Star Wars, I'm like, I'm not a big fan of Star Wars, but, and I gotta say the same thing for this, I'm not like a diehard fan, but even I was like, you know, mouth agape at like some of the stuff that you saw in that ride.
I don't get how you could not be impressed by this ride, especially the fact that the two times I've been on it, it's broken down while we were online.
We did have to wait a little bit, but it wasn't too bad.
No, nothing compared to the first time I went on it.
Because you went on it, and how long did you wait? It was like, it was raining or something, right?
It was in the pouring rain. It was pouring before we even got on the line for that ride, because it's a virtual queue. Long story short, you pretty much have to almost like book in advance the day of you go there a spot online at a certain time. But we finally were out of the rain and we're waiting for this ride. You know, we're getting pretty excited when you hear a lot of good things. And then they, you know, over the PA, they say, you know, they're experiencing technical difficulties. It's going to be a while. And that's like the first test. And then the second test is, we're not boarding anyone else at this time. You could wait out if you want to, or you could exit. And we're like, well, we're not skipping out on this. And also because it was very competitive, I should say, to get in the virtual queue for Rise of the Resistance. Right. I always describe it at nauseam, at least the first time we went on it, you had to be in the park to try and reserve a spot, and you have to do this on your phones. So you get into like the entrance of Disneyland and everyone is just huddled in groups and everyone is just trying to do it at the same time. And you're hearing distant cheers in the background of people got in and other people are still stressing out because they haven't gotten a boarding group number yet. But right. it was so fulfilling to get that. But we were like, well, we're not going to blow this chance. And also it's pouring rain the rare times it does in L.A. So we wound up, I think we were sitting in a corner of this, and the line queue was like an underground resistance base. We're just sitting in this corner for about an hour and a half, 2 hours maybe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it felt like different ordeals, because at that point when they finally said, okay, it's going to be a while till we're back up, but we're going to bring all you through the line and we're going to give you passes to come back when it's operating. So thankfully, later that evening, we were able to get on, and it was, it's handily one of my favorite rides, if not my favorite ride now.
It's definitely top five. I mean, Splash Mountain's still my favorite, but this might be two or three. It's really that good.
Like, it doesn't have a legacy yet. That's the problem.
But I mean, that's just so amazing. Now, give us the very, just as quickly as you can, go through the entire list of what we did that day.
I apologize. I literally wrote this down, so I gotta just.
Oh, like hand, flip, like on with, yes, with a journal. Quill,
yeah,
and a scroll.
I'm not. Yeah, that wasn't me joking. Yeah.
Pied Piper, please unveil the royal scroll and sound off the list. Thank you.
So, Rise of the Resistance, then Splash Mountain. And then we went over to California Adventure for Radiator Springs. Then the Mater ride, the Hoedown, Hootenanny, whatever the hell it's called. Then Grizzly Rapids. Then the Golden Zephyr, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Then Goofy's Sky School. Then the Silly Symphony Swings. Then Mickey's Fun Wheel, the sliding track.
Which was very fun to see Aubrey's reaction.
I always love seeing the look of fear of anyone on that ride, including myself. I get spooked. Then the Incredicoaster was working again, so we went on that. The Guardians of the Galaxy ride, the Monsters, Inc. ride, and then we went back to Disneyland, and we did Indiana Jones, Pirates of the Caribbean, the Astro Orbiter, because I don't think I've ever been on it.
Underrated ride.
Very underrated. A great time to go on it, too, is when people are starting to wait for,
like fireworks and stuff?
Yeah.
Or the shows? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So pretty.
And it's at night. Everything's lit up, and you're just looking down at a crowd when you're spinning around. It's really cool. Then we went on the Matterhorn. Then Space Mountain. Star Tours. And then we finished the night with the Haunted Mansion.
That was, I mean, because, I've gone so many times, I can just trace that on a map, what we did. And we were thorough. That's like fucking, you're in a video game, like side questing, like you're covering every inch of the map. Like, we, Big Thunder Mountain was closed, so we couldn't do that. But we did every single, is there a single big ride we missed? Like, one of the big rides?
Not really, Smuggler's Run is still kind of new, but I would say that's a big ride.
I mean, Smuggler's Run is good, but it's not something that I consider a huge priority. Like,
no.
And one that could definitely be done, on a second visit or something like that.
Right.
But, it was quite a day. Now, Aubrey, having, this being your first ever Disney day, what was your general reactions, thoughts on that experience?
It was incredible. First, we got grouped two for Rise of the Resistance, and we weren't planning on being there, right at open. Right. So,
yeah. So we were like, okay, we're going to go. Yeah.
Let's go. So we had, and we were collar pulling, so we had to meet up and everything, but we got there just in time, just in the nick of time. And it was just like, okay, speed race. Like, okay, don't take any of the sights. Don't look at Main Street right now. Like, oh, here's Main Street. We got to walk across the park. Sorry. So it was like, oh, okay. I'm racing to get there. And then
I was worried. I didn't want that to be your entire experience of like, all right, come on, we got to do this. Come on, come on, let's go, let's go, let's go.
Oh, no, it wasn't. It was truly just to get to Rise, which was totally understandable. Because
after that, it was pretty chill after that. I mean, we hit everything at a nice leisurely pace.
Yeah, we also, we went on a weekday. We went the day after Labor Day, So that park was not that packed.
Yeah, it was really empty and there was like no line. So for me, I'm like, is this what Disney's also always like? It's so great. There's no waiting. There's no. So that was incredible. And then Rise, not spoiling anything, it just was, it blew, well, I didn't have anything to compare it to. So I'm like, wow, all Disney rides are incredible.
Like, I think I said to you, I was like, hey, just so you know, this is the most like recent ride. It's yes. possibly one of the best. So don't hold everything to this standard.
You did. You absolutely did. And we had time, like after like racing there, we had a little bit of time to like chill in line because the ride broke down, but for just briefly, which is not a big deal. So it was kind of nice to chat and catch up and everything, just shoot the shit in the line. And then, yeah, Rise was amazing. And yeah, some standouts of the day is the Splash Mountain was really fun. I wasn't expecting to be as thrilly as it was. I thought it would just be like one big splash, but it's just like those little kind of waves in the middle were crazy.
I remember we kept teasing you the entire ride. Like anytime there was like a small drop, we'd be like, oh, this is it. This is it.
There's that one part where you're going up and it feels like it's going to be this big drop and it's not. It's just completely level. But we totally like, was you it you that we faked out? Me. Yeah, like, it's just, just completely level. Yeah, oh, I love doing that.
It was great.
On the topic of Splash Mountain, real quick, just want to say the drop that's really bad is not the main drop that you see. It's the one inside, the one as you enter into the laughing place. Mm-hmm. It messes me up every time. Actually, when we went on Splash Mountain, I think that's the worst I ever got soaked on that ride.
I think I was drenched. Me, I forget if it was that time or with our friend Maddie. It might have been, oh God, I can't remember now. I'm mixing up. One of those two times, or was it when we went with, you know, I'm just name dropping so many different Disney. Or when I went with, I don't know, Leo, was Leo there also with Maddie? That was the same time, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yes,
that's when we went in August,
end of July. The first drop, like not the one just like outside the cave, I got wrenched. Absolutely, like the entire, like, I almost described it like the fucking first part of the log, like filled up like a cup. Like I was like, so much water got in.
It's always a telling sign, like what your experience is going to be like when you board that log for Splash Mountain and you see how high of a level of water there is at the floor of it.
Right. Yeah. And you go in and it's just like, it's like, oh boy. All right, here we go.
And I'm used to being put in like the last seat. Like, and that's usually the safest seat, but that's like, that's like going into a public restroom and using the handicap stall. It's like nice and luxurious. I could like spread my legs out a little bit. I got plenty of shoulder room. My head always gets cut off in the picture though. But... So, and I was sitting in the second seat.
How tall you are. It's like,
cut
off. Yeah.
But I was sitting in the second seat this time behind Sung Wan, and I felt like tidal waves were hitting me. I always like curse up a storm at that drop inside like the laughing place. Wow. Yeah. Did anyone hear that, by the way?
So right now it's thundering in LA for me and Steve. So it's very, very surreal. It rains very rarely. It almost never thunders. So I know Twitter is freaking out right now. But yeah, so I mean, I guess Aubrey, in general, you know, what were some of the highlights of your Los Angeles trip?
Oh man, we ate so much good food. Going to Soban was delicious. Oh. That was definitely one of my favorite restaurants I've been to in quite some time. Our Korean barbecue was also delicious too. I've never had Kobe beef, and that was great. There were so many courses. I was like, we can't keep eating, and it was like, yes, you can.
Yeah. So the Soban, for listeners, is the restaurant that Bong Joon-ho and crew and cast went to after winning for Parasite, and their specials are Ganjang Gaejang, which is soy sauce marinated crab, raw crab, which is great. Kalbijjim, which is braised, you know, beef, and then the braised cod is just amazing. Like, Steve, you have not been there, right?
I missed out on that night, I believe.
It was a lunch, so but yeah, okay. We absolutely need to take you. What is the name? Or like a tekujurim. It's or undegujurim. Yeah, it's basically a spicy cod. It's like melt in your mouth, just falling off the bone, tender fish, really delicious sauce. That was great. And then we went to Tenraku for KBBQ, which Steve, you were there for that.
Yes,
that was insane. That was like I was worried that we weren't gonna get enough meat because it was, you know, kind of pricier, higher end. I'm like, okay, so we might need to expect, you know, good quality meat, but not be full. But we were fucking stuffed by the end of that. That was a lot of food.
We feasted for sure.
I've been to a lot of Korean barbecue places with you lately, and it feels like every time we go, it's like a Legend of Zelda like boss rush dungeon where we think we're done, but there's still like a couple more rounds.
It's so great. Yeah, like we're like, okay, that was it, right? And they're like, oh, here's the fried rice we put in the pan, and here's the free ice cream. It's like, oh yeah, keep it coming. Keep the boss waves coming. Was karaoke the first time?
Karaoke was the first time, yeah, that we were hanging out,
and that was great. That was
that was amazing.
Really fun time. What was the favorite song you sang, and the favorite maybe memory of the karaoke?
Song I sang. Oh no, man! It's getting I'll give you now.
The same question too, Steve.
Okay, Aubrey, to you. I have my answer, but
okay,
what's your answer?
Yeah.
My favorite. Well, some honorable mentions is we went to like the one place I knew of that had two songs from Sonic Adventure 2.
Yes.
So
our good friend Elvis was like, we got to go there. We got to go there. They have it. And yeah.
Elvis is like, I know those songs. You know those two songs. Yeah. But my favorite, it was such an obscure pick. Sung Won and I sang Dick in a Box, which was the old SNL digital short from like 2005. Six,
yeah,
maybe?
It's from ages ago, yeah.
Yeah. And I was amazed, you know, it's not the most complicated song lyrically, so.
And yeah, I remember right up where I left all off. Of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good choice.
Yeah, that was a great memory. Well.
people that performed.
I was gonna get to like my other favorite memory of the night, but.
Yeah, what was it?
Aubrey might mention it, so. If not, I'll.
What do you got?
Well, I'll start with my other favorite memory, just in case it's what Steve's thinking of. Is I like when Steve was improvising. We didn't know how to quite work the remote how to control the karaoke machine, and so there was just the, you know, the random video footage that they put on, and it was just a very elegant, beautiful rendition of singing all of that improvisation. So that was pretty fun. But there's also a lot of. Yeah. I think we sang Inuyasha's opening song, one duetting. So that was pretty great. So maybe that was my favorite song I sang that night too, because I don't usually get to do that at karaoke.
And Steve, what did it? Is there another one you had?
Yeah, and this is the one that went public, went viral, if you will.
Oh, yes. the Don't Stop Me Now.
Should we explain the context, or just
you can
leave
watch
it
the
up
video.
To imagination?
It's... Yeah. Or like, yeah, it's just, I think the context is funny because basically, it was like the right at the end of the night, and we wanted to end with, Live and Learn, right?
Yes.
So we had like 5 minutes, and I was like, but you know, the energy had like died down or something. And I was like, okay, let's really get back in the spirits of it. And you know, we have a little bit of time, I thought. And so I was like, let's put on, and we had sung Don't Stop Me Now before, but I was like, let's put it on again. It's a nice closing, and then we'll get really, it'll amp us up for Live and Learn. And then we start it, and then the people come in for like the bill, right? And it just completely.
No, it was the valet.
The valet, yeah.
For the parking.
And it completely killed everything, the momentum, because. It was just
ironically,
like, oh,
it did stop
bill,
us now.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it did stop us then. And so we just, it was, then I think Angel and me and you, we just started doing it in bad accents, just saying the song as this was happening.
I still
Elvis was almost gonna kill me because we thought we ran out of time. Because I didn't notice that there was like an actual timer. Because a lot of karaoke places, like, once it gets close, they usually like give you some leeway of like, okay, one more song and then you can kind of take off, right?
Yeah.
But I didn't know that the room literally had a timer in the screen. And so like we ran out of time and Elvis was like, you're gonna, we ended on that. But I was like, I said to him, I was like, this was a good call because if we had done Live and Learn instead, the valet would have interrupted that and that would have been a bummer. But instead, it's good that we had like a throwaway song, you know, have a goofy bit. And then they were kind enough to let us, give us a little more time so we could do Live and Learn at the end. And it was great.
Yeah, it all worked out.
One of the two songs he knows. So, you know, I'm glad he got to sing that.
I also, from what I remember, we got there around like 9 p.m. And that was like 2 a.m. when we were wrapping up. And I don't think I've ever done karaoke for that long of a period. So
it was great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could have kept going. That was also
it was
one
a good
of the
icebreaker.
Yeah. You fit in like perfectly. I was like, man, Aubrey should move here. With, who knows?
I've never heard that before. You've never suggested that.
Yeah,
so long.
I don't know.
It's the first time.
But, it was also, I think, because, you know, I think I haven't done like a ton of karaoke in my life, but, you know, the other times I kind of did a lot of like weeb songs, but this was one of those nights where I actually pulled out a lot more like, you know, kind of just English songs. And I remember Angel being like surprised because they were like, what? You like always act like you don't know any music. I was like, I guess I know more than I let on, but I don't know. Music is usually like my big weakness of like pop culture, you know.
Yeah, well, like, you'd be surprised.
You
like
plenty.
Pop songs are popular for a reason because they're easy to memorize. And
yeah,
like I never knew I knew lyrics to Backstreet Boys songs. But then when someone sings in karaoke, I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's
for I guess I know this.
Right.
Like halfway through you learn the song, you're like, okay, I can jump in anyway. It's not that tough. So, yeah. Yeah, I love karaoke.
Yeah, the only thing is I can't like I have to like plan ahead because it's like, okay, I can't do karaoke right before the day of a session. Otherwise, there's a chance my throat will go out. Although I think that one I might have been. I forget if I was okay or not. I don't remember. But
not to call you out, but we did have one on the 4th of July that I think tore your.
No. That one. That one apart. Fucked me up. Yeah. I was like, I'm talking about. That one and the one after that fucked me up. Not fucked me up, but, like, it was... I always describe... So, like, to test my register, if I, like, am not sure, I do... there's, like... Do you remember... Either we watch OKKO?
Yes.
There's a character I do it, Johnny. You remember Johnny?
Yeah, he's the, like, the how-to-draw manga-looking kid.
You know, he's like, yeah, like Johnny. I'm like, can I do that voice? And if I can't do that voice perfectly, then I know that it's like a little worn. It's one of those things where like, if I like my normal speaking voice sounds fine, but then if I try to do that or another voice that is a good testing voice is, you guys, I don't think either of you are watching it, but we have the Danganronpa playthroughs on my Let's Play channel, and there's a character named Monokuma, and my Monokuma voice sounds like this. So it's like, if I can't do that, like, it'll sound like this. I'm like, ooh, okay. No, I gotta take a vocal rest day. That's how I, like, know if I went a little too hard on karaoke or not. But I think that time I was okay. I think I knew. I think maybe it might be maybe, like, me sort of, A, being more experienced with karaoke and knowing my limits and not pushing too hard. And B, maybe just like my vocal cord just getting used to that, like singing for 5 hours straight. Like, I feel like they get strengthened over time or something, or resistance at least. So.
Your voice is only going to get deeper. Go down a few octaves.
Yeah.
Which is like the dream. I should
fair number
should...
of people.
Oh, sorry, are we going to say
Oh, sorry. Just that we had a fair number of people, too. So we got to take break. It wasn't like literally we were singing 5 hours straight.
Yeah,
we had
right.
a good amount of people so we could switch off, you know?
And should, I should also state that this is the room style karaoke, not the go to a bar karaoke in front of everybody, sing by yourself and a bunch of strangers. No, no, no.
I've never done that style of karaoke. I've always only done like Korean Japanese style karaoke. Have either of you done like straight up bar karaoke?
Not at a bar, but at like a vacation place with my parents. It was like this lake. I'm pretty sure I did it there. So, and you just sing on a stage, and maybe also once I don't know. It was like it was a Girl Scouts and something similar Girl Scouts do. So, you know, but not at a grungy bar with people.
That sounds absolutely mortifying to me. Not because I don't think I can do it, but I just don't have any real desire to do it for a bunch of strangers. I don't know.
I did do it actually once in a bar. It was in Ohio.
What did you sing?
Vanessa Carlton's 1,000 Miles, because there's these guys. So my friend has these guys, and they always sing that song. We've done karaoke a couple times with them before. The first time I did Korean karaoke is at a bachelorette party with her. So, and after that, it was like a tradition. It's like they always sing 1,000 Miles. And so they convinced me. It was later into the night, and it was obviously because I was like, I'm not fucking doing that. Like, there's darts in the other room. We were going for like darts and just shooting the shit. And then they're like, there's karaoke over here. You should sing with us, Aubrey. And so, yeah. 1,000 Miles.
I see.
Yep.
Should have put that song on when we were all doing it.
Steve, what were you going to say earlier?
I think the only time I had done karaoke prior to the room ones, I think, was like I was young and it was like a block party. And I just did like a very metal rendition of Michael Jackson's Beat It. And I thought it got over well, but I don't sure if everyone was in on the joke or just laughing at me. And I'm a young, dumb kid. I thought, like, you know what? I should do it again. And that DJ was like, yeah, yeah, sure. And no. But no, I think when you do something, when it's like solo, like at a bar, like a karaoke night, I've never went to one. But that is, you gotta realize you're performing. That is a performance instead of room where it's like you're vibing. You're hanging out. Yeah. Like I'd much rather have a good time with friends than entertain strangers.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Absolutely.
And I find that for my strategy, and some people, you know, they don't even need to think about this, but I do, to make sure I preserve, you know, my voice, is it's like I gotta choose my battles. Like I can't sing. Some people, you know, like Jay, will sing every song, and that's great. You know, we need people like that. But for me, I'm like, yeah. I can't not do every single one. I gotta choose my battles, and I'll support if
you definitely need. Yeah, you definitely need like a team captain. You need the person that's going to like keep the energy up, who's going to like our friend Dave is one of those people who will put in a bunch of stuff. He will like gladly like help you out in a song. Like you definitely need that utility player.
Yep.
Yeah. But what was fun about that night in particular was, because, you know, I've a lot of the karaoke's I go to, it's very group oriented. Like everyone knows this song. But I found with that night, it was kind of fun. I'd be like, does anyone know this? And I'd be like, oh, Aubrey knows it. Okay, just me and Aubrey will sing this. And then, oh, like me and or Steve and Angel know this one. You know, it was it's kind of fun. I can also enjoy when it's like a little more quote unquote intimate, right? Where it's like, you know, just like very just having a good time, not worrying about, oh, do people know this song? I'll just put it on and see if anybody knows it and, you know, go for it. That's always very fun.
I still get very self-conscious, though, at karaoke because, yeah, that stuff runs through my head because I don't care much to be like, oh, it's like, this is my song. Like, it's the performative thing. Like, everyone pay attention to me. This is my solo performance. I'm like, no, I'd rather everyone be in on it or at least one other person. So, I remember going to that book. I'm like, oh, this is a good song, but I don't know if anyone would want to sing that. And then, like 20 minutes later, Sungwon has put that song up, and I'm like, oh, okay.
I was looking over at young Steven, his nose in the book, like, oh, what should I do? He's like, all right, I'll help the young lad. I'll throw on the songs. I mean, I love singing, and so for me, it's, you know, I never want to be like solo guy, but I do like, you know, putting on a show sometimes.
I think because there's less pressure to sing a full song. Like I enjoy singing in a car with like friends.
Yeah.
Because then it's like, if you don't know all the lyrics or you get tired, you could just let the rest of the song play.
Dude, I love that. Do you remember, me too. Not do you remember, but there was I think it was before our first karaoke together, Steve, where
yes,
I remember specifically we had gotten, what were we doing? Oh, we went to Galco's, right?
We went
to
Galco's. Sodas.
And you know what Galco's are?
No, I have no idea what that is.
Galco's is a soda pop shop in LA that's really cool. You go there and it's all they sell. It's just all different types of soda pop and booze.
Ah, okay.
Like really obscured, really interesting types of pop. Or pop, well, soda.
I was like, oh, your Michigan's coming out.
You are my Minnesotan's coming out. Oh, yeah, your soda pop there. But
what do you call a sandwich?
I call it a sandwich. What do you think I would call
not
it?
Not like a hoagie, a sub, grinder?
I do not.
Hoagies are like Philly, isn't it?
I mean, a sub is if you get like a sub-style sandwich.
Yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah, shut up. Anyway, we went to Galco's. We got fried chicken afterwards. And then I was like, because, you know, I don't know about either of you, but for me, when I was younger, not that young, but like, you know, maybe college. And so I would actually sing in the car with my friends a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was just had my iPod on. And sometimes songs would come on. But it wasn't something that really, well, also, for those of you who aren't listening who don't know, I don't drive anymore. So it's one of those things I actually kind of miss. And I was like, and Steve was driving me. And Mike actually in the back. What was funny was Mike wasn't singing, so it was just like Mike's two dads in the car, just like singing. we were just like going hard on like Disney's. We were like fucking pull up like a Disney Spotify list, and then we were just going hard on. I mean, what was when we Jungle Book? I Want to Be Like You. I think we went really hard on that.
That's one of my favorites because that and one of my best friends from back in New York. Like, you know, we really bonded over our strange tastes in music. Mm-hmm. And we would go all in on the I Want to Be Like You song, including the scatting. The scatting is the most essential part.
I hope I didn't disappoint.
I remember vividly. I think at that point, I was driving through Burbank, and I think Sung Hwan in the car says, "Like, I think that was a pretty big bonding moment right there." I remember you saying out loud,
"That was a social link upgrade."
That was a level up in our friendship. Yeah.
And I would say we already have leveled up several times, but like you know, that's like an intimate, special moment with Mike in the back, silent. I remember you were very like self-conscious, and I was like, "We're gonna sing." I was like, as we were walking back to the car, I was like, "We're gonna sing. As soon as we're getting in that car, we're gonna sing, whether you like it or not." It was great.
Did your family sing in the car with you? Like, did you guys just start singing that spontaneously, or
no? My family did. We did not sing in the car. That was just something. So when I used to drive, I don't know if you guys do this, but I would always. Like have music and sing out loud a lot, and being the weirdo I am, sometimes I would do voices to myself, like little bits. That's sometimes like this is also maybe around the time when I was like doing a lot more skits. So if I like, you know, had an idea for a skit, I might say it out loud, or if I had an idea for a voice or something, I would just talk. Do you talk to yourself in the car at all? Are either of you that like that?
Yes, especially to your podcast. So I'll be like talking like it's fucking voice chat. I'll be like shooting this. I'll be like, oh, I think this. I'm like, Aubrey, they're not gonna. I don't hear you.
I do do that sometimes with podcasts. Sometimes like somebody will say something. I go, oh, I'll be like out loud alone. I'm like, oh yeah.
It's only outburst of anger. Or say like if I'm listening to like a podcast and someone says something stupid, I'm like, you fucking idiot. Or, you know, someone cuts me off. It's like, no, I don't talk much in the car. Growing up, though, I think we were just subjected to my parents' different taste of music. Mm. That definitely rubbed off on my taste of music. But like that was before, portable CD players and iPods really became a thing. And then it was just like, no. Cool. Now I get to listen to my own stuff.
How would you describe, I'm going to ask each of you this, but I'll start with Steve. How would you describe your taste in music?
Like a weird dad?
Yeah. I mean, this has been popping up recently. A lot of people have been calling, including myself, been calling you very dad energy. That tracks. So like,
I think it started with a mutual friend of ours commented on a photo of us at we did a mini golf, and they said like Steve with the real dad energy. And
which
then,
friend was that again?
Maren Miller.
Have you ever met? Right. Yeah. Probably. I don't remember exactly who, but
she'll always bust my balls. But I remember distinctly it was a lock when you and I and Angel, we went to Knott's Berry Farm for the first time. I think it was the first time all of us had been there.
Yes.
And I am known for, like, every piece of clothing I have has like a cartoon character or something on it. Like, all I have is graphic t-shirts.
Honestly, me too.
And that was and that was a hot summer day. It was the one day I wore this shirt from Uniqlo I got. It's nothing on it, but it's like a super lightweight, breathable shirt. And then everyone else is wearing cartoon characters and crap. And and that's the time I get mocked for dressing like a normie.
And you had your sunglasses and your, you know, your dad stance. That was a really fun when it really stuck. Day, too, at the Knott's Berry Farm. Like, just a little recap for listeners. Like, I got to get Angel on again. But
this podcast episode has just been about, like, here's all these great times we had.
Honestly, I mean, I'm sure it's not uninteresting. But anyway, our good friend Angel, who's been on the podcast before, was, like, terrified of rides, right? Like, even the Incredicoaster at Disney was too much. And then we go to Knott's Berry Farm, and I don't really push them that much, but they just sort of slowly started to ride the most, like, increasingly intense, and then like crazy intense stuff where I was like, yo, like, and even Steve I think is like nervous about this, like, you know, the ones that are like from Topper, you weren't there, but it's like the you know, the ones that are like the gigantic loops, like not loop but like a giant upside down U in the going up to the sky, and you just go up and down like in like 10 seconds.
Those are the types I hate.
It's not so much I'm not fearful of the ride. I'm fearful of the signs that say your head can't go past the headrest. And I kept saying to them, I was like, I don't know, I might be too tall for this ride, you know, I don't feel like getting my neck broke for this.
That does make sense.
And also I'm so used to like Disney and Universal.
Yeah.
Stuff like Knott's and Six Flags, and that's more like amusement park. The rides there are just, every ride is super intense. So there's no, let's go on this, you know, thrill ride, and then we'll go, you know, we'll go relax on Pirates of the Caribbean. In some cases, you know, you specifically, maybe take a nap.
I always think I'm a pirate. That's great. So yeah, Angel, like, basically rode literally every thrill ride in the park. And after that, they were kind of like, I don't want to do more. Like, we had, because, you know, we were walking to the park, and I was like, Angel, I'm going to make you ride that. It's the giant wooden roller coaster. And I was like, but, you know, in my head, I was like, but if they're really not comfortable, I'm not going to, you know, I'm just going
to,
but it's a amusement park. You know, it's fun to, you know, go with your friend. You should do it. You should do it. Right. But they without very much resistance at all, rode an extremely intense ride. And then it was nothing. And then they rode everything, and they loved the wooden roller coaster. And now I think there's even talks of it as like a Six Flags trip or something at some point. Like, you know, I was so proud of my child. Of like, congratulations. Like, I our cured child, you. Yeah, our child. I cured you of your fear. And now, you know, they rode the Incredicoaster, and like, this is nothing. You know, it's like, why was I, you know, I love that. I'm glad
they were telling me.
Yeah.
At Disney, they're like, all this time I've been depriving myself of these fun thrill rides. I can't believe my whole life.
The one thing I'll give Disney credit for all their rides is they're very accommodating to people of all sizes. And I am very tall.
Yes.
And I realized that it's not a tall man's world when I was at Knott's Berry Farm. And there was some rides where it was close, and there was one ride that I couldn't couldn't actually get on because I was too big.
Yeah, you were too tall. And I remember we were like, I was like, let's do a bit where when we get off, we go, that was amazing. But no, I didn't. It was not. It was.
I wouldn't have believed you.
You didn't miss out. Okay, so going back to music. Music.
It's bizarre. It's these days, like, I love 80s music. Mm. I think that comes down to just anything synth. But like, I like a whole lot of, I like a whole lot of range of 80s music. I think the video game Grand Theft Auto Vice City was very influential on my taste in music, because you got a sample of all of it, all the different genres. And I think that led to, you know, and I was kind of like, a sheep without its flock, I guess. Or no, a flock? No, that's birds. Sheep without its herd. Sheeps can't fly in recent years. But now there's like just the internet has introduced this wave of like synth wave, laser wave, future funk. Mm. And that's kind of like where I, you know, I lay my head down now. I enjoy a lot of that. I don't like getting the what kind of music do you listen to? Because I think it's not so much I like listening to bands or genres, like whatever song I like, and it's just that.
That's very much my. I'll get to you, Aubrey, in a second, because mine is so basic. But yeah, that's pretty much mine. My iPod is just a combination of tons of anime openings, yes. K-pop, a lot of musicals, a lot of just random songs I've heard, you know, from different sources and things. I'm like, oh, I like that song. I'll throw it on there. Some video game music. But yeah, like, it's when people are like, what do you listen to? It's like just a weird mashup of everything that I like, but there's no weird, like, I don't know. Probably, I think, a very similar to your iPods. Maybe yours might be a little more focused, but same
stuff. I still listen to anime openings, too.
Oh, I always do.
I remember my senior year in high school, my portfolio class. One of the students, I think the teacher just always, she brought in a Burn CD and the teacher just always played it. And I thought like, hey, how come if I brought in a CD, would you play it? And I did. And it was just like a huge mess. And I remember the teacher saying like, I feel like I'm getting whiplash listening to the CD. Cause it's like, it's not consistent at all.
What was on?
But that's, I couldn't tell you at the time. I think I downplayed it a little bit. I'm like, well, I was talking about earlier, karaoke. I'm like, all right, I got to please the crowd a little bit, play things people know. But I think it was just there was no consistency because I was not a cool kid. Never have been. So like, I'm not playing like the most recent like hits and all that, whatever rock was at that point. I'm like, I'm just going to go all over the place and play what I like. You know?
I remember. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. This is the last thing I'll say. My taste of music is the equivalent of, you know, going to a fountain soda machine and just getting all the sodas in your cup.
Yep.
Mine is like a YouTube playlist of just literally a fucking stream of consciousness. Just, I watched this show and that was funny. No, I saw that opening. That was fun. But I was going to say two of the first CDs I ever burned were a CD containing all the Inuyasha openings and endings and only getting all the Naruto openings and endings. And listening to that, those are my Walkman. Oh, classic. Amazing. Times. Now, Aubrey, your music.
Oh, sure. Also very eclectic. Fewer song openings. But my family's pretty musical, so I'd listen to anything from, like, my dad used to work at a record store, so we had a bunch of records and vinyls. And he would make, like, mixed tapes, cassettes. Like, we would take cross-country road trips and belt out singing them all the time. And he would make, like, thematic mixed tapes and stuff. So anything from, like, big band and swing to, like, classic rock to, you know, 80s, 90s, you know, aughts hits. I know all the pop stuff. But I also love what I actually listen to the most, like, currently is a lot of indie, a lot of folk, a lot of alt stuff and rap, R&B, a lot of stuff. I listen to a lot of stuff. My brother's trying to get me into punk because he was briefly in a band and played for a bit. So, and is into punk, but that's one I'm less familiar with. But I try to listen to a little bit of everything.
I'm calling it now. Your playlist is 1,000 times hipper than me and Steve's combined.
For sure.
I
might be a little bit punk savvy because my brother was a big punk guy and he was the one with the computer. So kind of like my first iPod at the time, it was whatever music he had, I'd put that on my iPod. So I was familiar with a lot of that music at the time and I didn't really set my own path until I got my own computer. And that's when it just became like the giant parfait that Jay stirs. That's my equivalent of music taste.
don't degrade your music taste like that.
No, here's the thing about the Jay stirred parfait. Delicious. It just doesn't look that way.
Was it?
Have we talked about the Jay parfait before,
we
right?
Did. Yeah.
The part J.
Go
listen to that episode for that story.
Yeah.
It's funny.
I'm curious.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna ask if there's any like obvious like influences your parents had on you on on your taste in music? If there's like one band or any artist like your parents always listen to, and now like that's ingrained in you, you like listening to them as well.
That's interesting. Not really, because like I forget if I said this on the podcast or not, but like my parents didn't really listen to music in the car or for fun that much. Like, not that they didn't like music, you know. Well, my dad, like, he likes listening to like operas, you know, operatic music.
Oh, cool.
Like
Pavarotti. That's awesome.
It's very unique.
It's very, and you know, like, you know, singing along with it, and you know, we make fun of him, but there's like, you know, he's that kind of guy. Or I think the most like accessible thing is, I think they both have an appreciation for like, you know, classic rock of like the, you know, like probably like 70s, 80s, that sort of thing. But other than that, not, we never really listened to the radio in the car. Like, that's such a, you know, foreign experience to me. Like, I don't know, like, usually.
Have you ever gone on long road trips?
Yeah, but I was more focused on like either, you know, playing games, playing like a video game, like a Game Boy, or like playing with my brother or bothering my brother, or, you know, or we would talk, you know, play games in the car. We just weren't like, a big radio family for whatever reason. Like, I don't know. I'm not sure why not. It wasn't like they were like, no radio. They just never did it. But how about you guys?
I know one that it's one band that I do not listen to that my father to this day is like, you're going to like them someday, which is Steely Dan. I loathe Steely Dan.
it's funny you brought that up, because I like Steely Dan, and I think that's because my dad spammed that. I truly am a dad, because yes. I like
Steely Dan. I mean, that is Steely the most dad. When you said, I literally almost made a joke. I was like, do you like Steely Dan, Steve? Because that's a dad's energy song.
Oh, yeah.
Band. Yeah, I mean, oh, those saxophone solos, I can't. They're musically very good. I get it. But my dad spammed Steely Dan like hard. And so it just had the opposite effect of me. I'm like, enough Steely Dan.
my dad, when he got into the Black Crowes, he would not stop with. And sometimes my dad would listen to like the same one or two songs over and over again. In some ways, I am my father's son. I can't remember how many times he's asked me, like, if I listen to Dave Matthews, and I'm like, I don't. None of my friends do. My dad will still talk to me sometimes, like I have cable. Like, for 6 years now, he keeps asking me if I watched The Game.
Yeah. Did you watch The Game, son, on the television?
And honestly, half the time now I just answer back sarcastically, but I think the conversation still rolls along. So I don't know if he's like dishing it back at me or he believes me. I don't even know anymore.
Now, for both of you, I would like, you know, in podcast tradition, is there a topic or question that you want to bring up for the group? It can be anything. Mm-hmm. And well, if either one of you has one.
This is one I had in mind.
Yeah, what's up?
And I am aware of your history with Mario fan fiction. Besides that,
sure.
I'm curious what any of your creative endeavors were as a kid, like something you went all in on and you don't do anymore.
Interesting. That's a good question. Mario fan fiction aside, like I did do a lot of writing, like stories and things like that, which I don't really do anymore. I used to draw a lot as a kid, actually. I used to draw like quite a bit, like little comics and other things, and design. And I would write like quote unquote movie scripts and act them out with people. But the drawing is something that's really, you know, interesting. You know, it's something that completely stopped after a certain point. I remember I took like there's some like how to draw class, and it was just. I just could not grasp it. I was like, oh, okay. Like, I don't get this at all. And it wasn't like a sad feeling, but it was a feeling like, oh, like, I can't, because, you know, anyone can do it, can, you know, get better at anything if they try. But it was one of those things where I don't have a knack for this, and I don't know. I just, it wasn't something I was super passionate about, you know, as a kid. You know, all kids draw as kids, right? But it didn't stick with me.
Yeah, not to be so pessimistic, but I definitely think there's got to be something that clicks in like that certain part of your brain. A lot of people can draw too, and there's some basics you pick up too, but I think it's the human brain is a very interesting
organ. Well, I think it's honestly just it has to be interest. There has to be real genuine interest.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like that's what's going to carry you. Like, you know, a lot of, you know, our friends who are, including you, Steve, who are, you know, very accomplished artists, you know, they always describe their childhoods and their, you know, early years, and even now, maybe, well, maybe not less now, but like, they just were always drawing all the time, constantly, right? And that wasn't me. I wasn't drawing all the time. Like, it's no surprise to me that it was, you know, I never had any aspiration of like, I want to be an artist. I just liked drawing, but not enough where it was like everything I wanted to do. You know, voice acting was something that maybe like high school onward was something that I was like, I do really, you know, I really, really, really want to do this, and, you know, poured everything into that and really got a lot out of it. But that is very interesting. A lot of people ask, like, you know, how did you know you were going to get into this? But the question of what did you do as a kid that you don't do creatively now is very interesting. While I think of some other stuff, Aubrey, do you have any answers to that question?
Oh, to that? I used to write fan fiction and also poetry.
We were talking about this fan fiction literally last night, actually.
We were.
But I would love for you to share if you'd like.
Okay, so my first fan fiction I was young, and I was one of my earliest internet haunts was Quizilla. Are you familiar, Steve? Do you know Quizilla?
Quizilla? That sounds familiar.
It's where you would take like online quizzes. You make online quizzes.
That does sound familiar because I loved personality quizzes and tests and all that. Maybe because I just like, I don't know myself very well. I'll let someone else decide which fictional character I'm most like. I would do a ton of those back in the day.
It was fun. Yeah. And you're like, post them on your live journal. Like, look at me. I'm Greed from Full Metal Alchemist.
or they're a forum signature. I remember there was a website. I think it's long gone. It was My Otaku. It was like, it was similar to something like Live Journal and other sites like that. And a lot of people used to post all those on their page.
Yeah, so that was my gateway. It's like, what element are you? I'm like, ice or water, you better get that, you know, or whatever it is. But like, so then I found a different corner of Quizilla as a child. And there was like very crude choose your own adventure fan fictions you could basically do. So like, you know, it's a quiz format still because that's what it is. But people would write like dialogue and then, or, you know, exposition or whatever. And then you would get to choose like your answer of dialogue. So you'd have different endings depending on what you answered. And if you're a really good fan fiction writer, you would link to other, you know, different quizzes. It's like, okay, if you got this ending, click to this link. If you got this ending, click to this link. I was never that advanced, or, you know, whatever. But it was fun to take other people's quizzes and do that.
Yeah,
so,
when you described this to me, I was like, oh my God, I never thought about anyone using the quiz format for a narrative, but that's kind of ingenious. Like, you know, it's like a Telltale game, right? Like,
which, you know, I love. I think, yeah, I could see why they're all connected.
That's great. And I mean, Aubrey, like, you don't have to share this if you don't want to, but do you want to describe one of the books that you wrote as a child?
You know what? Sure, fuck it. Yeah. So as a kid, I was like, one of the only ones I remember, because I wrote a bunch of crap, you know, I was like 10, but I was like really into Yu Yu Hakusho. And I was like, this is my OC. It's not me, but he and Kurama are at a club and this person's going to a club too. How do you react? Like, so it was that, which is a typical.
What,
like,
happened,
you know,
at the club?
Oh God, just like, I think just general dancing. There was like, and it's like, you know, the ending was like, do you get Hiei or Kurama? Like, who do you dance with? Like, basically, it's like the choice at the end of not to spoil my, you know, wonderful fan fiction, but yeah, there's some dancing, there's some drama. I think a drink was spilt and was an embarrassing moment, you know, but it was recovered with a dance at the end, and, you know, something like that, something along those lines. Very
sounds like the end of a modern animated film.
So yeah, yep. So those are some of my earliest internet haunts, and sometimes I would collaborate with my friend, and we would do write things together on that too. So it was fun.
Steve, did you have any?
I think the first one that comes to mind is I used to make movies with action figures.
Yeah.
Quite stop motion. I mean, I got a little bit better at animating them towards the end, but used to just with a camcorder and those tiny little cassettes. I forget which model it was, but made a lot of those up and through I think high school too. I was like, those were like weekend projects for me.
Oh, okay.
It was
what was like your best one you ever did?
I think towards the end I was doing some of them would never get concluded, but I did one continuation of Metal Gear Solid 3.
Mm. Oh.
And I remember I used my brother's I forget what the name of this line was. Think of like the big like 12-inch G.I. Joes with the cloth, you know, clothing and all that.
Sure.
And I remember just asking him, like, hey, can I borrow these? And my brother's not one to let me borrow a lot of things. He, typical older brother, would blame me if anything was, you know, amiss or broken. And we filmed it outside because normally I would make these movies in my bedroom. But we filmed this outside, and I remember it was drizzling that day. And
I'm sorry, was this you and your brother together?
No. Sometimes I'd make movies with him, but honestly, my brother and I, because he would make some movies too, we'd kind of make our own, and then we would show them to each other. Half the time, my movies had like an audience of one or two at most.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is the complete opposite of like how I get about my art these days. But the fact that I would put that much work into making something only to show it to the friends I made it with or my brother is really bizarre. It's working way too hard.
I think that's very pure. But I love that.
It is. Yeah. Oh my God. I wish I could go back to caring less. And
it'd be like making a trivia night for only a few people.
I know. Or running a weekly Pokemon RP completely from scratch. Yeah.
No, it's very inspiring. The fact that, you know, it's just making things that aren't monetized. That's just, you know, do it for the fun of it, for just the joy of creating. And that's, that's harder to do the older you get because you have more responsibilities and you've got to take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I remember this one movie in particular. I remember filming a lot of it in my friend's backyard, who was my next door neighbor at the time. And we're filming it near like some tall grass near like a creek in my backyard. And I remember it was drizzling a little bit that day. And I remember when we were finally done with it and I was showing it to my older brother and he's watching it and he just turns to me and says, "You played with my figures in the rain." but then he was won over because the movie was hilarious. All my movies were comedic.
I love that. I love that he's like, okay, but this is funny, so you get a pass.
Yes. He was like, it's all good. It was all worth it. I had a few Metal Gear movies. I had like a Spider-Man series. My brother and I collectively had so many Star Wars figures that we made so many Star Wars movies, a few Dragon Ball Z ones here or there. A friend and I tried recreating the movie They Live starring Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
And the reason why it was easier to make is because I had a bunch of wrestling figures.
Nice.
So, yeah, I did a lot of those. I think it's because it was, you know, easier to make. I'm like, well, I got these toys. I don't have to draw this out. You know, I can just shoot it.
Yeah, and that takes me back to this. I had a camcorder that you literally put did you ever have one of these where you put a VHS tape in it?
And yep.
Oh, man, I loved that. I made movies, you know, all the time. I did, you know, a quote-unquote let's play of me playing Mario 64. Like, so I just literally pointed the camera at the TV and me and, you know, my friends, and I was just playing it and, you know, dude, just goofing around. And weirdly enough, yeah, I was like, it was straight up a let's play. Like, and we watch it again if there's like a funny part or whatever. There was also it's funny. This is something that maybe if you'd asked me a year ago, I'd say I don't do this anymore. But I remember as a kid, I would design like kind of like game shows and board games and a lot of stuff. Like I oh god, this is really bringing out a lot of memories. I tried to make a Yu-Gi-Oh knockoff, but with Mario. Like, so what I did was in MS Paint, I like made a format of Yu-Gi-Oh cards. This was before they had like those you could just make, you know, customizer Yu-Gi-Oh templates. So I just made my own template. I would take like sprites and stuff. I would write all the rules, given like the attack and defense, and I printed them out. And then like, you know, you could actually play, you know, play a game with these like flimsy paper cards. there was one I did where I was like, I was really into Dungeon Dice Monsters. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
You know what that is, Aubrey? One of the few. Dungeon Dice Monsters?
I have
Monsters?
No idea what that is.
Okay.
No.
It was a spin-off thing in Yu-Gi-Oh! That essentially had a grid, and the dice would unfold. You know how like a dice has six sides, so they unfold into these six square like shapes, and like you like put them on the board and whatever, and they like, I forget the exact rules, but I basically made my own knockoff of that. I was like, that's so cool. So I would like, you know, make the shapes, fold them up into dice, and then the dice would open up into the shapes, and I had like different. Oh my god, so. Fast forwarding to now, because I would just have Word docs filled with stats and, you know, all this stuff, and for all these games that either did or didn't come to fruition, some did, some didn't, and, you know, running the Pokemon RP that I do now, it's just that. The reason why I get so, enjoy doing it so much is it's just scratching that itch I had as a kid of just making these, designing a whole game from scratch. Like, I don't know, there's something very satisfying to me.
I miss that purity. I miss that childlike innocence where you weren't afraid of anything. If you just wanted to make a game like that, if you wanted to make a movie, you just made it.
Yeah.
Nowadays, right. I think of like all the technicalities. I'm like, oh, I gotta make a movie. The lighting has to be good. You gotta get the best equipment. I gotta make sure the script is tight. I didn't write a script when I made movies back in the day. I'm like, all right, this is the scene I want next. We gotta make sure this is said, and let's just roll with it. Let's just, you know, say something. I miss being unbound.
Yeah, like creative exploration and freedom you get as a kid.
Yeah, I get that. And, you know, that's something kind of like with, even with YouTube, like there's this kind of pressure, right? Of like, you can't just, I do kind of miss, it's kind of what Vine was fun for, but even when Vine became popular for me, then it was a little more of a pressure. Maybe I'll do TikTok. Maybe I'll throw stupid, like effortless things on TikTok or something. I don't know.
TikTok's fun. You would be great on it.
I guess.
I think it's just for fun, like, because it's like fun. I mean, it's hard because you're in such a different place now. So there's always an expectation for you. But it's just fun to play and experiment on TikTok. I like do it with videos, and it's like not perfect or just anything. But it's like, oh, well, I'm hiking. I like making pretty like short, very short vignettes of like my hikes or whatever on TikTok. And it's just for fun, you know, whatever. But it's like very freeing. It's like, yeah, it's not perfect, but whatever. Who cares?
Something that people always go, you should do it. I'm like, maybe. Man. And who knows? Maybe when this is out, I've changed my mind. But I don't know. We'll see. There is kind of like a nice tempting, like you could just, you know, it seems like even if someone doing like a dumb like impression of something does bonkers on there, and I'm like, probably come up with just like goofy things that I feel like doing, but don't necessarily warrant an entire YouTube. I don't know. We'll see. But now, Aubrey, do you have a question or topic that you want to bring to the table?
Curious, since we've ridden this nostalgia train, like what were your favorite field trips you guys went on?
Ooh, that's a great question, actually. I have one to start, and I loved this. It was a outdoor winter camp. I want to see if I can remember the name of it.
In Minnesota,
yeah.
Damn, that's intense.
It was an overnight camp. This was sixth grade. I think it was Wolf Ridge. Yeah, the Wolf Ridge Environmental Learning Center. I'm pretty sure it was this. And it was just like, you went there, it was winter, snow everywhere, and you did all sorts of activities. And it was maybe like, I want to say like 3-4 days or something like that, which, you know, going overnight with your school friends, and it's everyone, right? And you're like in cabins, and it was just really special. Like, if you know, it's not something like that you really got to have very often, that whole experience. And there was like snowshoeing and like zip line, like a weird, like it was like a zip line, and like you could like mountain rock climbing walls, and it was,
that's awesome.
It was amazing. And just like I don't know, like I have very, very fond memories of that trip. Yeah, how about you guys? Any field trips jump out for you guys?
I have one when I was older. Yeah. I kind of, and so in college, we had this class in our senior, was it junior? I don't know, whatever, it doesn't matter. In photography, it's just like, hey, we're going to tour around the area and show you all the different ways you can work as a photographer, right? Like, and a lot of it was like photo studios, print shops, art galleries, et cetera, et cetera. But one that I loved was being able to go to NASA Goddard Space Center.
Ooh.
And tour it, because apparently they have photo positions there. There's like two photographers there. One of my alumni work there currently.
Mm.
And it was amazing to see them. So I think they still are. They were working on what's going to replace the Hubble telescope, which is the Webb telescope. And you get to see like the clean room that they go in, and you're like, see literal astrophysicists at work, and walk by machines that simulate a vacuum of space to test the parts. It was just incredible. Ooh. That was really fun. Just like from a, like behind the scenes, getting to see, and it was like during work day. So it was just like, it's just a day at NASA, you know, whatever, just tour it. And have these like cool people do that kind of thing. So that was probably, as an older person, that was fun. But as a kid at Girl Scouts, we got to sleep over at the Discovery Zone. It's like this like little museum in the Inner Harbor of Baltimore.
Mm.
And that was really fun. Being able to sleep overnight at a museum was really fun. I tried to sleep in a fake dinosaur print, and they're like, get out of there. But still, pretty fun.
Nice.
So
how about you, Steve?
And for me, my entire tenure of elementary school was pre-9/11. So we definitely got to, fifth grade was the primo field trip year. That's when you got to go to some cool spots. And being in New York, that's when you get to go to, the Bronx Zoo.
Mm.
I think the Museum of Natural History. I think the Liberty Science Center. But oh, I think the first one that came to mind, and it's always in the fall, I think it's within the first, I think it's around October when we go, you go to this like stay away camp. I think it was called Ashokan.
Okay.
Maybe it's the Ashokan Center.
Yeah.
It's basically like, think of like summer camp, but like you just go in the fall, and like they take the entire fifth grade class.
Mm.
And it's definitely like a coming of age trip. It's like, cool, you got the, you're staying away from home, with a bunch of like kids your age, and you get to do a bunch of outdoorsy stuff like fishing. You could go canoeing.
Mm.
I think there's like the crazy bridges, like the ones you could like jump on,
Yep.
I remember there was also like a recreation of like an old schoolhouse, and I don't know what came over me. I think I just wanted to perform that day. So I just acted like an idiot, and I was made the dunce. Like I had to sit in the corner and face the other way, because I was just like, I was treating it like I was a freaking shtick. I don't know what came over me. I was just like, I was like Mystery Science Theater 3000 in there.
Yeah.
And I remember one of the fifth grade classes from other elementary schools went too. And I remember one of the teachers from a different school came up to me and like tried to like talk, like whisper in my ear. It's like, can you stop? Like, can you, it's like, what's the matter? Can you calm down? And I remember turning to this teacher saying like, what, it's a bit. 10-year-old me. And I'm like, yeah, I'm just like, I'm playing along with it. Like, I think karma hit me good, because I think the following morning when we went to like the fishing hole, I never got to fish because my fishing line got all tangled up on my rod. So I was bummed out. And I remember that teacher walking by me as I was like sitting aside somewhere trying to untangle my fishing rod later. And somehow a 10-year-old me knew what karma was. And I was like, I guess I deserve this.
I couldn't tell you. That's the most Steve thing. What? It's a bit.
Which is like half the things I say. Honestly, I think a lot of times when like someone will joke with me and I play along and I was like, all right, calm down, Steve. And I'm like, what? I'm playing along. Am I that good of an actor? Should I pursue this? Maybe I'm just so, I think just my presence is just very large and loud. Everyone's like, okay, calm down. Stop yelling.
He's going to charge. Oh, the bull. Yeah.
But that, I think that was just a really fun trip. And I think a sentimental one was, my parents were never really the parents that they would bring along to keep in charge of groups of kids.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like the
chaperones, yes. And my parents were never really chaperones because, they worked during the day. And my dad, too, was especially busy. But the one time he was like, yeah, I'll be a chaperone for when you go to the Liberty Science Center. It was so lax. My teacher was like, you really don't got to watch over some kids. You could just, hang out with your son. So it was just me and my dad getting to, like, just hang out on a field trip.
That was really nice.
That's fun. That's cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I'm like, I'm just in this nostalgic mood right now. Like, when I was in elementary school, I was, I hesitate to say like class clown, but kind of like I did. I very much like try to get people to laugh and get in trouble, and I would, like,
I'll tell you right now, if you were in my situation in that recreation of like the schoolhouse,
yeah,
you would probably be killing it. Like, people would probably think you were funny. Everyone probably just thought I was annoying.
Well, I mean, I would just do a lot of silly bits or whatever, like, and the best would be like if I could crack someone up. And then the teacher like was like, stop. And they're like, but he has. I'm like, why? I didn't do anything. I remember, I forget if I told this story on the podcast or not. You remember when you had to do the Pledge of Allegiance?
Yeah.
I don't know if this is a thing that kids still do in school. I honestly have no idea. I don't talk to children much these days, but
that's good. I have many questions.
I talk to kids all the time. In fact, exclusively children.
Considering how our generation especially refuses to let go of things, you want to talk about nostalgia, like we're all still into a lot of the things we were into when we were elementary.
That is very true. So, but I remember
we could talk to kids.
Yeah, I was doing, like, we were doing the Pledge of Allegiance, but like for the girl, a friend of mine standing next to me, just to make her like break, I would do it in a really thick like Texan accent, like, I pledge allegiance to the flag, and like, but unison, no one can hear it except she can hear me doing it because I'm right next to her, and she's like, stop. I'm like, and to the republic for which it stands, like, just like stupid shit like that. Oh my, like, God, I like, elementary school, and for some kids they didn't have a great elementary school life, but I loved elementary school. Like, I don't know about you two, but I had like, that was like fun. I don't know, it was, middle school onward, then it became like, oh, you gotta do like, okay,
that was when sad reality hit.
Yeah, it's like, oh god, there's actual like homework you gotta worry about. But, like, I don't know, like, sixth grade before and kindergarten through sixth grade, I honestly had a blast. But I don't know how your guys is.
I loved elementary school.
Yeah.
Because I think it was, it was more creative and stuff. There were some rough spots. I remember I genuinely thought I had a chance of failing the fourth grade. And
oh, really?
How was it when you found out that you were graduating to the next class? Because I remember that year, your teacher would call you up one-on-one to just go over your final grades for the year.
Yeah.
And I remember being terrified. And I remember when my teacher was just like, you pass. And I was like, yeah.
Was there like a particular subject you were struggling in, or?
I am not good in... You could tell by the way I talk. Math and science, not my thing. Well, then again, elementary school wasn't so bad. But I remember even like in second grade, like I couldn't grasp division right away.
I see.
Like multiplication was easy.
Yeah.
But division, like I, and even like, God, the stuff you got to learn from middle school on, like my brain just, it never clicked for me. Mm. And since I think since teachers are all just trying to teach everyone the same exact way. Yeah, I struggled, but I don't know. I'm not the brightest bulb.
I disagree. It's just certain subjects don't click with people.
Yeah, I mean, science for me.
I think I just remember maybe doing poorly on some tests, and I thought like, I don't know, Steve, this is it.
Mm.
Well, it also really affects what teachers you have, right? Like I've had teachers, I was terrible and still am at spelling, like execrable. Like I spelled in first grade breakfast with a Q on a spelling test. I don't even like, and a bunch of other letters. It was bad. Mm-hmm. And so for a long time, English was like, I was like, oh my God, I'm so bad at English. I hate this. And it was supposed to be in like, you know, not the highest level honors, you know, English in middle school because I play so badly in it. My parents were like, no, you're just going to work harder. Sorry. You're going to be an honors. Like, okay. Mm. But my English teacher in middle school was just actually like, he read over my stuff and was just like, hey, actually, like, he read my paper, I forget, an essay to the class, but he didn't say who I was. It just was, like, anonymous thing. He's just like, I think this paper is really good, and I want to read it to everyone. I was like, oh, Jesus.
Oh, God. why do teachers do that?
But nobody knew who it was, so it was, like, not horrible, but I was sitting there, like, sweating. Oh, God, please. And then, oh, no. But then he pulled me aside after class, after everyone left, and was just like, Aubrey, you're a good writer. And it was the first time anyone had ever told me that. It's like, you know, the grammar and all that stuff is, like, we can work on that. That's the easy part of writing. The hard part is getting the different concepts and seeing, like, analyzing stuff, and you articulate those things well, and it changed. Like, I was like, damn, now I want to try it, like, more, like, you know, I'm interested in getting better in this. So
isn't it great when, you know, adults inspire kids to
right
but to it just was succeed. Like reframing it. It was just like, oh, okay, maybe I'm not terrible, because before it was like, oh, you're hopeless, you're pretty bad. And I'm not trying to say it was bad, but there's with grammar and spelling. But yeah, you know, I don't know. Was there any teachers or mentors or people like that inspired you to do something differently, or see something a different way?
That's a good question. I mean, yes. I mean, I think I was pretty lucky that for a lot of my early years, I had very supportive teachers. I'm trying to think of like ones that are like, oh, like super standout, because I mean it sounds like I didn't have any, but it's more like they were all pretty generally supportive, you know what I mean? So it's like,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But did you either of you have like that sort of moment?
Definitely, for sure. I think being like an art kid, I think anytime like teachers saw that, they, you know, definitely like pushed you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny, just still talking about elementary school, like how I liked it so much. Having an older brother, I'm sorry, it's a little off topic, but still talking about school.
Sure.
Having like my brother is older than me, so he was already in elementary school when I was he was in sixth grade when I was in fourth grade, and mm-hmm. he had to wake up earlier. School started earlier for them. So naturally, I guess I'll just start waking up when he does, you know, just so I don't know if it was like I wanted to be like him or just like, he's doing it, I'll do it. That's how I wound up discovering Pokemon. But what I would used to do, it's like I would just be up early and then there's really nothing to do at home. And my elementary school was a quick walk from my house. I would just walk to the school early and just hang out and wait for people to show up. You know, like, wait, you know, you have to wait outside the school or wait inside in the main lobby, but you wait for other kids that either get dropped off or they walk to show up, and then you start like hanging out. Maybe you play tag or something. Yeah. And at one point, the vice principal of my elementary school wrote a letter to my parents asking me to stop coming in early.
Oh my God.
And my mom got pissed because they spelled my name wrong.
Mm. So she's like, fuck this guy.
Steven. They spelled Steven the incorrect way. My mom was just like, you've been going to school for like, it's like 5 years and they don't know how to spell your name. And it's like, screw her. And then my mom said, Steven, just don't go that early. It's like, why would a parent get mad at you for doing that anyway? It's almost like, wow, you should be.
It's better than going late, like, right? You know? Yeah.
Yeah, right? It's like that I showed enthusiasm. I used to do. Sorry, it just ties into that. Because my elementary school was so close. And when it got to be like August, when back to school season was starting, sometimes I would just walk over and walk in and visit old teachers and see if they needed help with anything, like setting up the classroom. I don't know why I would do that. I guess I just didn't know what to do with my time.
Helpful kid. I mean, that's a great quality to have. Yeah,
I guess. But I remember specifically doing that with my third grade teacher, who I got along with a lot. She would joke about my Star Wars fandom and how I like Jabba the Hutt. Mm-hmm. But I remember, in my later high school years, I would just walk to and from high school because I didn't feel like taking the bus. Yeah. And I would cut across where my elementary school is all the time. And I think one morning I was walking to school, my old third grade teacher is getting out of her car. She's just parked. And she just like waves me over and to talk to me. And she's just like, I don't know, she's just being so nice and like really like praising me and like asking me if I'm still doing art. And I was just amazed that a teacher remembered me after all those years, let alone recognized me. Right. But, you know, I will always remember that. And I have some other teachers that helped out too, but I don't want to take up the entire conversation.
I remember when I visited Minnesota, this was not that long ago. This might've been maybe two. Oh God, no. Okay. Because of COVID, I got to think, okay, that year plus. So maybe this is what, maybe like 3 years ago or 3-4 years ago. We went back to not my hometown, but basically where I grew up as a kid, like for all of elementary school. And we stopped by my old elementary school just to, like visit, I guess. And I ran and my old first grade teacher was still teaching. And she remembered us, like, I mean, very, very vividly, like, cause my mom had been a very active chaperone, during elementary school. So like, she very much remembered my mom, remembered me. It was like, she was like, oh, yeah, you're doing, you know, I told her what I was doing now. And she's like, oh, wow, that's, you know, amazing. And I always knew. And I was like, damn, that's very, very, very nice of you. Going back to your question, Aubrey, of kind of like, I've had a lot of very supportive teachers throughout the years. But one, there was a teacher actually in college, actually, at Michigan State. And I'll shout him out, John Whiting. He's the best. I took audio classes with him, audio class, advanced audio. And during that time period, I think it was maybe the last 2 years of college, I did a lot of, that was like, I think the first 2 years of college before I just knew what I wanted to major in, I was pretty reclusive. Didn't really like, I was also, you know, commuting. I didn't like live on campus. So while I had like friends, I wasn't like a social butterfly or anything like that. But once I decided my major, which was media arts and technology, and started taking a lot of those classes and seeing a lot of the same people, that's when I really started to open up and did a lot of, like, you know, wrote a lot of like comedic stuff and did a lot of performing. And then also included the audio classes where we had to do stuff like, you got to write a whole radio play and record all the dialogue and all the sound effects yourself. Or you're going to take this scene from Star Trek, but there's no sound. You have to do all the voices, all the, you know, basically fill all the audio. And I remember most kids in my class were like, they wanted to get into like the music industry or, you know, film industry or whatever and so forth. But I was the only kid who was like, yeah, like I want to do voiceover, which was not super common, I think. And I, you know, I didn't really like bring it up. And, you know, I think I remember him sort of like asking about it, like, what are you, you know, what do you want to do? And I was like, oh, well, you know, voiceover. And he was like, yeah, no, I absolutely think you can do it. And that meant a lot, you know, because it really, at the time, it, you know, and even for, you know, years after that, it just felt like a pipe dream, right? I was like, yeah, but I mean, I don't, it's impossible, it'll never ever happen in a million years, but I really want it really bad. But to have someone actually be like, no, yeah, you can do it. You have the talent for it. It was very, it was very, very important to me to hear that at the time. And yeah, how about you, Aubrey? Anyone else besides your
Oh, my English teacher. Let's see. This is going to sound super cheesy, but my dad was the first person who, so I got my first camera back. Since I was a little kid, since I was four, I always wanted to be an artist. I'm like, I want to be an artist. And for me, because I didn't think about it and I was four, and I was like, that means drawing. But I was like, and I liked drawing, but I could tell I wasn't very good at it. And I took drawing and painting in high school, and I was getting better, you know, all that jazz. But it wasn't clicking with me in the way that it would with other kids that you could see. And I'm like, you know, I don't know. And it's like, how am I going to make money as a painter too? Like, you know, because I was really interested in like watercolors and stuff. Then I got my first camera at first to just take photos of stuff and then draw it was the intention. But my friend and I, we were bored. We lived in the country. So we like did a little photo shoot in her house and around just like anything and everything. And I brought back these like 100 photos or so and showed them to my dad. I was like, oh, look what I did today, Dad. And my dad was like, paid attention, looked at all of them, 100 of them. Or hundreds of them. And he would comment and make, like, actually give me my first, what I turned out to be like a critique. He's like, oh, this one's really good. Oh, you know what? If you try this with the lighting, da da da. And the fact that he's just like, you know, you should keep doing this. That you, I think you really have a thing for photography. And I think this might be something you might be interested in. I was like, I never knew that. And we would go on drives. Like, he would, because before I could drive, he would take me out on like long, like, drives after school so we could take photos of like further afield.
How old were you?
My backyard or whatever.
When he did this.
Let's see. I got my first camera at 15. I burned it out within a year because there's a thing called a shutter life. And you can use up the shutter life of your camera. And I did it in my first year. It was like a little point and shoot camera back in the day before there was no cell phones or smartphones or whatever. And so after that year, I was also working at McDonald's. I managed to save up a little bit of money and then buy a DSLR. And actually, before I bought my DSLR, I was like, talking to my mom after work, I was like, man, I'm so tired of working at McDonald's. I really want to be a photographer. She's like, well, have you emailed any local photographers asking them if they need an assistant or an intern? I was like, no, I didn't think about that, but I'll do that. And so she's like, okay, first you want to research them and their websites, see which ones you like. And, you know, also, so both my mom and my dad really helped me on my path.
Do either of them have a background in photography at all?
My dad was always like the family documentarian, and he would do a bunch of extensive like videos and stuff. And he still shoots, you know, still, takes photos and stuff, but he wasn't like a professional photographer by any means or anything. Like he loves it. He probably could be if he worked at it, but he was a stay-at-home dad and my mom was the one at work. And they did that. So he was busy raising us basically.
But that's awesome though, that like even without a background, he was like so supportive and like, hey, yeah, you should do this. Like, which you didn't even realize at the time, right?
Yeah, yeah. So my mom had an English major and my dad was a philosopher. So they were like, you should do whatever you want. Like, don't worry, you'll figure it out. I'm like, okay. But yeah, they were both super supportive. My mom was like, yeah, write to all those like local wedding photographers. And she taught me some of the business skills that I needed to get like a foot in the door so I could start wedding photography back in like high school and stuff. It worked out.
Wow, I wish more people did that for young people. Yeah. I mean, it's, I mean, it's different now with the internet, but geez, even in college, it's like when I was in college, I don't think people were quite telling you, like teaching you the business side of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's tough. The actual business, and I by no means was perfect by it. Like, oh, like when I was in college, I knew everything. Like, no, I still working my both other jobs. I've learned a lot of other stuff about business and photography.
Should always be learning. Never stop learning.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. But it was super helpful to have that experience beforehand because I also wanted to make sure, like, I don't know if I want to pursue this afterwards. And it was a little risky for me to work at the wedding business because it was like, hey, you just spend your entire savings on a laptop, Photoshop, and a DSLR. I was like, okay, let's do it. But it worked out. So it was okay.
I mean, while I think we could keep talking for hours and hours. I think this is a good ending point. I think talking about people that inspired us, people, you know, feels good, man. Always, you know, it was very fun going through these childhood memories with both of you. Now, before we sign off, where can people find you guys? We'll start with you, Steve.
You could find me at my website, steveyurko.com, on social media like Twitter, Twitch, Instagram, at Steve Yurko. And check out some of the shows I storyboarded on, the latest being season 5 of Rick and Morty.
And Aubrey.
Yeah, if you Google my name, Aubrey Garwood, you'll find my website, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, whatever.
Fantastic. Thank you guys for being on, and it's always a pleasure.
Always.
Thank you.
Peace.
Bye.